brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host, Jessica Bordolo, here with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us in our introductory episode, but trust me, they're pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. David, where are we in the church year?
We're in the 14th week after Pentecost, the time when the church celebrates the life of the Spirit.
And Peter, what's the text for this week?
Our readings are from Jeremiah 15, Romans 12, and Matthew 16.
Okay, as always, each of you tell me which text you would preach on. And this week, Peter, you go first.
All right. I am looking at the gospel reading from Matthew chapter 16, particularly the first three verses. So would you read Matthew 16, 21 to 23, Jessica?
From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you." But he turned and he said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a hindrance to me, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man."
Thanks, Jessica.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That would hurt.
Yeah, really. And this is what struck me about this text this time. Imagine Peter following Jesus, loving Jesus, respecting Jesus, honoring Jesus, listening to him, and then you try to defend him, and he says, "Get behind me, Satan." And that is incredible.
And having just made a big confession right before
just the verses before, you know, the Father has revealed this to you.
Oh, yeah.
When he confessed Jesus faithfully, and now he's just trying to defend Jesus, it sounds like, or at least we'll get to that in a minute. But to be called Satan by Jesus is an incredible thing. And when I was reading through this, I thought, I think we should slow down and think about that a little bit. And why did Jesus say that? What is he getting at? What does Peter do with that? So that caught my attention. And it made me think, first of all, before I even went too much further, have you ever had someone that that you loved and respected kind of call you out? And it's interesting that Matthew doesn't really give us a reaction from Peter. He tells us what Jesus says to him and then what Jesus says to the disciples. But Peter is just kind of left in the, kind of left speechless, I guess.
And you know, that when you get called out like that, what's so hard is that you know you personally have kind of acknowledged this person's authority, this person's love, this person's care, and so what they say matters.
Especially, this is, again, the context, right after Jesus said, you know, "Simon, son of Jonah, the Father's revealed this to you," to go from so high to so low so quickly.
It's like, well, I guess he didn't reveal everything to me.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, what comes between Jesus talking about his death and resurrection.
Right.
And
right.
So that's going to be something that is, obviously, we're going to have to talk about, and it's going to be kind of a key to this.
But I think it's really important, if you're going to be preaching on this, that you have to know what preceded it.
Yes.
Because,
yes,
you know, separating those two by a week, you lose a lot.
Right. Well, right, especially if you didn't preach on Matthew 16
right,
last week.
Yeah.
So you do have to back up and give this context. And so then the key phrase to me, though, in this, for the sermon that I think I would want to highlight, is the second half of verse 23, "For you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man."
That makes me think of that passage from Isaiah about the ways of God are higher than the
right,
ways of man. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
God has other thoughts in mind.
Right.
And which is why you have to listen very carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so it.
And trust.
And trust. And that's what Peter would have had to have been doing here. I mean, his conception of Jesus did not include, what does it say in verse 21, suffering things from the elders and the chief priests and being killed. And he didn't notice the resurrection either, apparently.
Right.
But he could not recognize this in Jesus' life. And because his mind was on the things of men, not on the things of God.
And it's interesting that it's setting your mind on the things of God. I'd want to look in to see what that means. But I mean, there's a difference between thinking the things of God and setting your mind on the things of God. There's a certain courageous dedication that could happen if you're, this is what God is saying, this is what God has promised, and I'm just going to be tenacious and hold on to it. I'm going to set my mind on that.
Yeah, and in a sense, you're not in control always of what your thoughts are.
Yeah, you're not trying to understand
right.
as much as you're trying to hold on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then that leads the rest of the passage. Then Jesus turns to the disciples, and he talks about what do we do with the things we think about or the things on which we set our mind. And then that gets to following him, denying yourself, take up your cross, follow me. And this is a different way of thinking about what it means to follow Jesus. Certainly different than what Peter was thinking.
And it's so obscure. I mean, it's obscure just like it was above when he talks about his suffering and death. I mean, he's going to he's going to come with his angels in the glory of his Father. I mean, that the Son has angels? I mean, how many people have their own angels, right? So you had this, the glory of his angels coming in his kingdom. I mean, so many of these things are really hard to understand.
Yeah, and what follows there in those last couple of verses, they're all kind of abstractions.
Right.
You know, taking up your life, taking up your cross, losing your life, profiting to gain the whole world. What does that look like? And so as I was thinking about preaching on this, I was thinking, I think it would help to get more concrete in some of these things. And that's actually where I don't normally like preaching on two texts, but I thought here's where the Romans passage could be kind of helpful.
Oh, okay.
Because what does it mean to come after Jesus, to deny yourself and take up your cross? And when you look at the Romans passage, there's this long list of, this is Romans 12, where Paul's kind of just giving some exhortation for how to live as a Christian and what does it mean to, in light of the gospel, be faithful. And you can kind of almost pick almost anything out of this passage. But the part that, to me, I think I would maybe lean into would be verses 15 through 18 as maybe one way of thinking about this is what it looks like to pick up your cross and follow Jesus. Would you read Romans 12, 15 to 18?
Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honorable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peacefully with all.
Okay, so when I think about picking up your cross and following Jesus, one way that looks is to... Well, Jesus did that. He suffered for others. That's what he was doing on the cross, suffering for us. And it's not easy to live in harmony with others and to repay.
It's not?
It's to withhold repaying evil for evil and to do what's honorable in the sight of all. So I'm thinking about how we interact as a community. And we pick up our cross and we follow Jesus by our humble, sacrificial love and willingness to put up with others, frankly, and that because that's hard. I mean, I think that's really hard.
Definitely. Yeah, because I mean, it's repay no one evil for evil. So, there evil has happened to you,
right?
And you feel like you have a right to repay it,
right?
You know, in kind, right?
Right, and that's the things of man.
Right.
That's how we think.
Right.
That's
how we think.
That's why that phrase in verse 23 in Matthew's reading to me is such a fundamental. You have the do not set your minds on the things of men, but on the things of God.
Right.
And that you can get to that in so many different ways. But I think the Romans reading helps us think about this interpersonal relationship, especially I would say even among the people of God. How do we interact with one another when things aren't going as well as they should? So actually, I kind of like this. I kind of like to tie readings together week in, week out.
Right. Yeah.
And I actually think you could do a series of sermons on the things of God versus the things of man.
Yeah, you could.
Because you can see it in a couple of readings the next 4 weeks, but in Matthew's, the pointed readings from Matthew all get to one aspect of the things of God that are different from the things of men. Mm-hmm. And so I think this could be, you could almost introduce this, this sermon could introduce a little bit longer discussion and consideration of the various ways in which we can contrast the things of God with the things of men.
Mm-hmm.
A worldly way of thinking is that suffering is bad and you do what you need to do to avoid suffering. Conceive of that being appropriate for Jesus.
Right,
for
because he had
suffer.
Just said Jesus is the Christ.
Right, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God.
Right, so this would never happen to you.
Right, this can't happen.
Right. You know, it's kind of like who wants to follow a crucified Jesus?
Right.
You know, I mean, if you're kind of, you know, I want to follow the living Lord who's, you know, glorious and splendorous
right.
and powerful and able to feed mm-hmm. 5,000 people and will make
right.
everything better.
Right.
I don't want to follow the one who's got wounds in his hands and lets himself be beat up and killed and died and he rises and, you know, it's just, you know, and tells me that ultimately you will be raised too. But until then, it's hard.
And isn't that the Christian life that, you know, we cling to and we hope in the resurrection in the end? And we understand intellectually that that requires, well, those who are raised are ones who have died.
Right, right.
And yet the reality of facing that death, that suffering, is so hard.
Yeah.
It's so hard. And so I think this mind of Jesus that Matthew gives us is really important for us.
And, I mean, it's important for people today, right now, because being a Christian can be difficult, and it can make your life more difficult.
Yes.
And it's the exact opposite of what people think. You know, if I follow God, it's going to be good.
Have you guys heard that great quote by C.S. Lewis? I didn't expect Christianity to make me happy. I knew a good bottle of port would do that.
Or gin, or scotch, or bourbon. There's a lot. Yes, man.
Come to think of it.
I have a lot. Yeah, it could make me happy. Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, and that's the sad thing, right, is that, you know, things have changed. And life is harder. And, you know, people may want to walk away because it's not as easy as it once was. It's not as promising as it once was.
Yeah, and the promise is not for the present immediate.
Right. Yeah.
That's, I think, and when you're preaching, you know, you got to proclaim the promise of Jesus. And the promise that's kind of latent in verse 25, whoever loses his life for my sake will find it.
Right.
This promise of life that you will find.
Yeah,
that's
right.
God's promise.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be without suffering, and it won't be until after suffering.
Right.
But the promise is still good, and that you got to make loud and clear, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Your life is going to look very different because it's actually not yours.
Right.
It's God's.
Whoever loses his life,
his life
for
right.
my sake.
Right. We'll find it. We'll find the life I'm giving him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Which in a way is kind of comforting because then it allows you to let go of what your preconceived notion of what your life should be or would
mm-hmm.
be.
David, which text would you preach on?
Well, I have decided that I would go with Romans 12. And I think Peter described Romans 12 very well. It's just a whole bunch of exhortations.
Yeah.
So, Jessica, why don't you read 9 through 13. So 9 through 13, just to get a flavor of what it sounds like.
Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, but fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality.
Okay, so this is the type of text I give to my Om 1 students because I want to prove to them that they can't always cover every single verse in the text.
Yeah, that's true.
Because there's just so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to think it's better to go deeper on one thing than be really shallow on a whole bunch of things, yep. right? I mean, yep. you could be, you know, you could try to cover this whole text. I guess you'd have to try to think about how are these exhortations grouped?
Yeah.
Are there common themes that you know, give you some sense of progression? But I'm much more a fan of just picking the one that hits you and leaning into it. In my office, I have this, my parishioner called it a memory box. When I left the congregation to come here to teach, she took these little white stones and she wrote a single word or sometimes drew an image on them. So like, you know, it could be like block sale or pigs or this image of glasses or, you know, and there were things that had happened during my time there that usually were very funny, mm-hmm. and I can tell you some of the stories, but, you know.
Please do.
I don't know, but so there's this box of all these stones. It's in my office, and if I open it up, I can just take, you know, I'm faced with a whole bunch of stones, but to actually enjoy it, you take out one, and you look at it, and you remember what she's talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it just kind of, it opens up a portion of your life for examination, contemplation, and you just kind of rejoice, and then you put it back in the box and close the box. And that's what I think this text is like. It's a whole bunch of memory stones. It's paranesis, right? So it's exhortation, but paranesis mm-hmm. was a very particular form of discourse that was directed not to the uninitiated in a philosophical school.
Mm-hmm.
That was protrapsis. That was done to the uninitiated, people who had no clue you did protrapsis. For the enemies who were challenging you, you did the diatribe, you know, so therefore we should sin all the more that, you know, grace should abound, but by no means, right? So mm-hmm. that's diatribe for the enemies. So for the uninitiated, protrapsis. For the enemies, it's diatribe. For those who are already part of the philosophical school, it was paranesis, which means you're already doing these things, and I'm just encouraging you to do them more,
mm-hmm.
right? So this isn't a whole bunch of commands like the Ten Commandments that
right.
are to strike us as, you know, oh, I never thought before in my life to let love be genuine.
Right.
No, it's rather, I know you have genuine love. You've experienced it in your life. You've shown it in your life. Keep doing it. Right. And so it's these encouraging words that are recalling moments in life when things happened and then encouraging you to do it more and more.
So I'm thinking, Dave, what's exciting about this is you think about in a sermon, a pastor recalling some highlights.
Yes.
From the lives of his congregation.
Yes.
And
that's
say, you know, I remember when this or
yes.
did you notice that?
Right.
And then you let the experience and the life, the spirit led life of the congregation bubble up into your sermon.
Yes, yeah. That is right. And so that's kind of, and it's really, I mean, that's kind of, you know, it's up to you, you know, rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep. So you think about the last year of the congregation, what were the joys? What were the sorrows? How did we rejoice? How did we weep? How do we do that? How do we live as Christians rejoicing in the gifts God gives us and weeping over those things that we should weep for, but with Christian hope, right? So
yeah, so one way to do that is to sit down in your office and to try to remember, okay?
That's one way. Yeah.
That's one way. Now, of course, the problem with that is your memory's not perfect.
Right,
and
yeah.
also,
and some things you're rejoicing over, they're not.
That's right. You may be rejoicing.
I was so glad they got rid of that program.
Yeah, that's right. But imagine this week asking members of the congregation to share memories of these things. Just read this before, you know, your council meeting or your youth group Bible study or your shut-in visits. Just read this and ask them to choose one of those stones
right. yeah.
To reflect on what they rejoice in.
Right.
And that would help you speak on behalf of and for and ultimately to your hearers,
right.
I think, even
right.
more effectively.
Sharing with them the things that are commonly known and shared, right?
Yes.
And for a moment, seeing how God is with us in all these things.
I would totally use this in a youth Bible study.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah, and have them actually tell the stories.
Oh, wouldn't it be great?
Yeah, if you as pastors, if you'd ask me like a week ahead of time and say, can you write down some of the things that the teens say and then you mm-hmm. could use it in your sermon? The
oh,
kids would love that because then
they
could hear their answers in the sermon. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I can imagine some people kind of hesitating on this would be, well, you know, you got to make sure the gospel's front and center, mm-hmm. not just what we've been doing here. But this is Romans 12, after Paul has clearly laid out the basics very thoroughly of the gospel. And this gets back to your paranesis comment,
right.
that this is to people who know this and need to hear it again, the good
right.
news, and then also called to further the Christian life.
And, I mean, any one of these can be centered in Christ. Mm-hmm. As you're preaching it.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, thinking of, so it's kind of one of these things where I would take one of the, I'll call it a memory stone, but I would take one of these exhortations and I would let it be a refrain. And I would probably spend time talking with people or by myself brainstorming situations, both biblical and congregational contemporary, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of when this was true, so that you're able to weave together real life in the times of Scripture and in our times today around these actions that that we're already doing, that the church has been doing for centuries. The story in John of the adulterous woman that's brought before him. Some people could say that the action of these people bringing the adulterous woman before Jesus was a demonstration of their love for God, because, you know, their love for the justice of God and the purity that's required of God's people would mm-hmm. bring her before Jesus. And then Jesus kind of cuts through the hypocrisy, writes on the ground, and whoever's without sin, let them cast the first stone.
Yeah.
So you're cutting through the hypocrisy. And then he turns to her and says, where are your accusers? And she's like, there are none. And now the one without sin loves in a genuine way,
mm-hmm.
right? Because he has the power to love her,
yeah.
because he has the power to forgive, right? So you just tell the story in a way that helps you hear, and you think of different stories where love was hypocritical or love was genuine. And then you just kind of weave that throughout the sermon. The stories you tell are the ones that you're going to choose that resonate with the people, where they can actually see it and it makes it clearer. I mean, so like if they're thinking, well, what is genuine love? I mean, I might tell a story I probably shouldn't say this, but I've been in churches where the sharing of the peace has been real. I mean, real.
Yeah.
These people are just like hugging, crying,
mm-hmm.
and it's real. And I've been in churches where it is so awkward.
Yeah.
I just want to go to the bathroom and come back after it's done, right? So there's kind of, you know, there's places where it's pro forma, we have to do it, so
right.
I'm sharing the peace with you. And then there's other places where it's just like, genuine that you're like, wow, give me some of that. That's what I want.
You know, when I think about these stones, these little phrases in those first couple of verses, the one that stood out to me was seek to show hospitality.
Oh, wow.
And I think especially we've been on some vacation traveling situations in the last couple of years where people have showed us incredible hospitality to welcome us and to care
it's
for
so
us.
It's so humbling, isn't it?
It's humbling, and especially, you know, this I do know because I've looked it up, but the word for hospitality is philoxenos, which is love of the strange.
Wow. Oh, man.
And that's what it means to be a host, to show hospitality, is love those who are strange
to you.
And yeah. and you can reflect on that quite a bit
mm-hmm.
in a sermon. And
I do when I look in the mirror.
Well,
I love that. It's real strange.
And to think about, you know, all these, you know, we proclaim Christ through these little phrases and,
right.
and the way in which God loves us in Christ, even as strange as we are.
Yeah. And the way in which our experience of loving Jesus, the crucified Jesus, teaches us how to love the strange.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Because that's what Jesus does.
Right, because that's the love, that's what God's love looks like.
Right.
And I would never have imagined that to be God's love.
That's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. You can find more episodes of this show on Spotify, Google, Apple. If you'd like to see the show continue, please subscribe, share, leave a review. I promise we'll read all of them. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordalo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Napsker spark your thoughts for next Sunday. I didn't expect Christianity to make me happy. I knew a good bottle of port would do that.
Or gin, or scotch, or bourbon. There's a lot. Man.
Come to think of it.
I have a lot. Yeah, it could make me happy. Yeah.